nervous?
Yes.
First time?
No, I've been nervous lots of times.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. Hey everyone, I'm Joe's mom's neighbor Doug, and Happy New Year! To celebrate, like a lot of you, I'm working on becoming a better person in 2017. In fact, some preposterous rumors have been circulating around the basement. I'm not positive who started it. Joe, his mom, OG, or that cat. If you ask me, my money's on the cat. Pretty vile rumors, really. Ready for this? Apparently, people think I'm conceited. Me, of all people. I'm so modest and unassuming. Who'd ever call me conceited? Well, more on that later. Wouldn't want to linger too long on my awesome little self, right? Coming down to the basement today, help us welcome from SunTrust Bank, Wendy Lawrence and Brian Ford. Also, we have headlines about a big company avoiding a merger or sale. Throw out the Haven Lifeline, take your letters, I crush it with the world's best trivia delivery, and much more. And speaking of conceited, now let's welcome two guys who always seem to be talking about themselves, Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
Well, that's a happy new year right there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not the one that's always talking about how great they are with the ladies down at the Sizzler. So I don't know who's conceited and who's not.
Happy New Year, OG. Let's not start this off on a bad foot. Let's start this on a positive foot. Happy flipping New Year.
It is, what, January 3rd already? Is the rose off the bloom? Is the bloom off the rose? I don't even know what to say about that.
Well, you know what? You're a day late, man. It's January 4th. What are you doing?
Oh my gosh, January 4th already, huh?
You were 4 days into it and you still can't keep up. You know something you want to keep up with? You want to keep up with stackybenjamins.com/magnify money, because when you head to Magnify Money, guess what happens? All kinds of good things to start your new year. All those debt problems that you had in December, those are gone, baby, when you start using tools available at Magnify Money, like a better checking account, a better savings account, or you know what? Better options on that car loan, on that debt consolidation, on credit cards. It's all there. StackingBenjamins.com/magnify money gets you there. And one of the prime places they get you there is this one, SoFi. That's spelled S-O-F-I. Because if you've got a student loan or you need to consolidate into a personal loan, low interest rate, flexible terms, and easy to work with. Those are the three caballeros. As I say, in my bad, I almost said caballeros.
In your Texarkanian speak?
Yeah, that is so bad. StackingBenjamins.com/SOFI to get the trifecta of goodness over at SoFi. And of course, we're going to be talking more in our private space, the green room. Head to join us at the green room, StackingBenjamins.com/green room. We're going to have our friend Dan Macklin over there this year, as we'll have Nick Clements from Magnify Money. Those guys are going to help us with some things, but Dan Macklin specifically is going to help us with when you shouldn't refinance your student loans. I think that's an important thing to know.
Coming from the horse's mouth of somebody who wants you to refinance.
I know.
When, to tell you when not to do it. That's a good guy in your corner right there.
I love having SoFi in our corner. So speaking of in our corner, we got lots of fun in our corner, man. We've got Brian Ford and Wendy Lawrence. Wendy Lawrence has this horrible story with a happy ending, OG, which is what we like to start off the year. She and her family had big time money trouble. She and her husband both got laid off after being in jobs for 15 years, and they had three kids living at home. How do you juggle everything when you got three kids living at home, no money coming in? She need to get everybody on the same page and quick. And we're going to tell a story with a happy ending there. Shouldn't spoil it, but there is a happy ending. And she and Brian Ford from SunTrust here to talk about how they did that. Good stuff there. But first, we've got some headlines, maybe a foreign language lesson. So let's move.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's headlines.
I'm all about happy endings, however they work.
You know, it's sad because the first headline today doesn't have that happy, not the happy ending you're looking for, OG. And it might be a happy ending, but let's talk about this. This comes to us from financialplanning.com. LPL, one of the big firms out there in financial land. LPL decides to stay independent after reviewing their options. This is reported by Matthew Monks and Kyle Porter. LPL Financial decided to remain independent after reviewing strategic options, including a sale, according to people with knowledge of the matter. The nation's largest independent broker-dealer, which was working with Goldman Sachs to find potential suitors, made the decision after soliciting final offers and determining it was better off going it alone, said sources who asked not to be identified. LPL, staying independent.
So how about the conflux of all the information about this? So news comes out that they're on the auction block, right? A couple weeks later, number one advisor at LPL, news comes out, says he's leaving, going to the competition, right? He's taking his $2.5 billion practice and he's packing his bags and he's going. CEO from LPL announces that he's out. Is that was that a shove or did he open the door himself? Number one advisor says, what are you talking about? I'm not leaving. I'm not going anywhere. The rumors of my demise are greatly exaggerated. And now this comes out and says, LPL's not going to sell.
Yeah.
What sale? What are you talking about?
Maybe they had a problem with CEO then is what you're saying. Could have been. No,
I'm just saying there's a lot of
intrigue,
a lot of stuff underneath the surface there. A lot of iceberg underneath the water.
If I'm a client and my advisor is an LPL advisor, first of all, I probably wouldn't know that because the way that LPL does business, each advisor, LPL.
Yeah, generally speaking, I mean, it's like a blurb on your business card.
Yeah, you don't really see LPL. You just see who your advisor is. But the
LPL does custody. So you could have, you could have your money at LPL, so to speak.
Where does the client end up in all this? Let's say LPL does end up getting sold. What happens to the client?
Yeah, I don't think really anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is like if your bank gets sold, your money's still there. The bank branch is still there. Probably maybe they merge branches or something like that.
When I ended up with Bank of America, which was
one of your like favorite companies of all time.
I was going to say that was a relationship from hell, but I didn't choose Bank of America. It was after three different mergers. My money started at Michigan National Bank. And then it became who I liked, but then that got swallowed by LaSalle Bank out of Chicago, right. Which mm-hmm. then got swallowed by Bank of America. Actually, it's only two mergers.
App on your iPad called Slither.io. Have you ever done that?
No.
Oh, you got to download Slither.io. It's probably not cool anymore. It was cool like a couple of months ago. But basically, you're like this little amoeba worm thing, and you got to swallow the smaller ones, and then you get bigger and bigger, and then you keep on eating bigger and bigger ones.
Yeah. And that's how I ended up at Bank of America and how I ended up. I mean, you always have to be diligent about your money, right? If your company gets swallowed and things start changing, you've got to be up on that.
Got to pay attention.
At least to some degree. Hey,
well, otherwise, much ado about nothing.
Our friend Devin Carroll is starting a podcast. How great is that, OG? This is our second headline.
That's nice.
Yes. And Devin's new podcast, we thought we would give him a little help and he's going to help us too. Because I don't know if you know this, Devin Carroll is fantastic at foreign languages. It has nothing to do with this podcast. We just asked him if he could help us learn some French. So with him and our friend Matilda, we've got a special episode, special feature of our show once a week for the next 4 weeks, learning French with Stacking Benjamins and Devin Carroll.
Bonjour. Welcome to French Made Easy with me, your host, Matilda. Today, I'm joined by certified financial planner Devin Carroll, and together we will share a popular and simple French phrase so you too can use it in your own life. Sound easy? Sure. Today's phrase is mutual funds with high fees make me uncomfortable, Larry. In French, you would say this popular phrase just like this. Larry, les fonds de placement avec des frais élevés me mettent mal à l'aise. Once again. Larry, les fonds de placement avec des frais élevés me mettent mal à l'aise. Now, let's hear certified financial planner Devin Carroll try it. Ready, Devin?
Okay. Fonds communes de placement, Larry avec des honoraires, élevés me font mal à l'aise. Ugh, nailed it.
Perfect. See how we sound almost exactly alike? You too can speak French easily and comfortably listening to Stacking Benjamins. See you next time. Au revoir.
I thought he nailed it.
Perfect, Devin.
And you'll find Devin Carroll's new show, Big Picture Retirement, wherever you listen to podcasts.
We should have this be like an ongoing series. There's French, and then we can learn Spanish and Russian. And
you have no idea how long it took us to put these four together that we're going to do over the
well,
next
I mean, they
weeks.
Are the most popular phrases.
They are.
So they will, you know, you're going to Europe for the spring. You're going to be in Paris.
You'll meet a guy named Larry.
You want to kind of, you know, be able to communicate. You're sitting at a restaurant. Maybe you're getting pitched a mutual fund. His name's Larry. And now you can say, these mutual fund fees make me uncomfortable.
All because you listen to our show. So lesson number one is stay away from high fees and maybe guys named Larry. And then number two, your broker dealer gets sold, but your advisor's going nowhere. Probably not going to affect your money.
Probably not a lot of anything.
No. By the way, we'll have a link to Devin's new podcast at the end of today's show and in our show notes at stackybenjamins.com. Thanks a lot to Devin Carroll for helping us with that. Wendy Lawrence lost her job, OG, after 15 years. And guess what happened around the same time? Her husband also lost his job. Isn't that great news?
Perfect timing.
Yes. Luckily, it all comes together nicely. Brian Nelson Ford, who's been on the show before, just some fantastic radio. Brian is just a lot of fun to talk to. Wendy Lawrence coming down to the basement to talk about getting your family together and get them on the same page to start your new year. Brian Ford and Wendy Lawrence, have a seat, guys. How are you doing?
Doing good. Great.
Hey, so
thanks, Joe, for having us. We're excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited that you're back, Brian, and I'm glad that you brought guests with you, too. That must mean you feel comfortable in the basement.
That's right. Good to be back.
I love this time of year because it's a time when everybody has New Year's resolutions. We're all thinking about doing things better. And Wendy, you've got this story that I absolutely love, but it doesn't start well. You and your husband both lost your jobs around the same time?
We did. It was a scary time in life for sure. We were recently married and we had experiences with our companies of over 15 years each and we're both laid off.
Wow.
So yeah, that was a tough time.
What happened there? I mean, you've both been with the company 15 years. So did you have emergency funds in place? Did you see it coming or was it just like all of a sudden you're out of a job?
We did have a plan in place, not to lose our jobs, of course, but you know, we had reservations of funds that allowed us to go through that period. You know, I was unemployed for 10 months and he was unemployed for 3 and we had 2 mortgages. So if we didn't have a backup plan already in place, I could have lost my home.
Oh, wow. And a lot of people did, as we all know. When it comes to the kids being at home, was everybody together about the financial plan at first, or were you struggling to kind of bring everybody together to be on the same page?
Well, it wasn't a plan for them to participate in the beginning. They just kind of fell into it. I was watching videos at the kitchen counter on financial well-being. And at first they're like, you know, what are you doing? What are you listening to? Then they would say, well, what did he just say? And then they started sitting down and watching them with me. It was really a natural introduction to financial well-being for the kids because they wanted to participate.
That's really cool. And Brian, let's bring you into the discussion. I don't see that enough where kids want to participate in the plan and parents are open to let kids participate in the plan.
Yeah, you're right. Sometimes as parents, we get busy. We would love for our children to understand these things, but we're just not doing enough sometimes to bring them in. So I love this story with Wendy. I love that, you know, maybe the kids weren't as interested, but she didn't let that stop her. And in fact, she watched the videos kind of in an open area, if I understand it right. And it was where the kids could kind of look over her shoulder and say, what's mom doing or what's going on? And then all of a sudden they're interested. I just love that. She didn't stop. And that's not uncommon, Joe, for someone in the household to be a little bit more financially inclined.
Yeah.
And for the others, maybe not to be. And so that's not abnormal. And it's tough for the person who's kind of the saver or the financial nerd. How do they get the other ones involved? How does that work instead of them just elbowing them kind of in the ribs all the time? Like, hey, you got to do this better. I also love how Wendy used the program to be the one elbowing them. not her. She let the program kind of speak for itself, and then they got it on their own, but it was because of her kind of starting and letting them kind of come in. And she also was very patient, which I love. That's tough sometimes when you're the saver. So I think it's a fantastic story. One I think we can all learn from.
Well, that is Brian, because I see a lot of parents that think that, you know, for the kids, this isn't their problem. They didn't lose their job and they want to be protective of their children. They don't want the kids to worry. How do you get the kids involved without having them worry?
That's a great question. It's not an easy one. Now, if they're very young, I actually agree with, you know, protecting them a little bit and realizing that mom and dad are going to be fine. We do have a plan in place. We've got education. We'll get our, and so if they're, I would say, you know, if they're 10 or younger, I think it's important actually maybe to do a little bit of sheltering, but where it's appropriate, letting them know that, hey, mommy and daddy need to only buy things that we value and that we've planned for. And I think the conversation needs to be pretty simple with some sheltering. Now, when you get a little bit older, look, children need to understand what's going on, and they are now spending a significant amount of money as well. And they need to be involved. And it might be a little scary for some of those children, but again, that is life. And I think if we do it right as parents, it can be a very good learning lesson. So it's a great point, Joe. How do we find that balance? I think it can be had.
Well, Wendy, you obviously did that. What ages were your kids at that time?
They were 16, 18, and 28 at the time. One thing that my husband and I did, I think was more scary for us than for the kids, was one of the exercises is to create a budget. And we sat down with the kids and showed them how much money we have coming into the house, where it goes, and how much we have left, and how much we spend on them. So that was a real eye-opener to us at first to create it, to really see where the money was going. I mean, we've had money, but didn't track it to that degree. And then to show it to the kids was a little scary too, because you don't want your kids to have to worry about these things. But it really changed us as a family, brought us together a little bit more. They understood where stress was coming from and where stress is no longer, based on the program that we follow.
How did the kids take it at first? Did you find that they were really afraid for the future?
No, I found that they were enlightened and, okay, this is what things really cost. When you go to the OnUp website, they have things basically for every stage in life. So we've had plans drawn up on the website that shows how to plan for college, how to start a family, how to plan for retirement. So there's actual tools that show them numbers. It's not mom and dad telling you, it's an outside party aiding you all in becoming more successful financially.
What did you see changed immediately around the house then, Wendy, as you guys all started working together on your financial plan?
Well, my stepson maxed out his 401k at his job.
Wow, cool.
Yeah. We're like, if you're still going to be living at home, you might as well take advantage of it and really begin to save for your future. The youngest one started a savings account, and in just a couple of years' time, now has over $3,000 in there. So she is going to be going off to school in the fall. And one of the tips and tools on the website talks about what to do with your graduation money. So we've been talking about that. So she's excited to have funds to work with and knows where she wants to go and what to do with it. And then the 18-year-old, she got a job, which she didn't have before, and, you know, stopped asking us for soda money and gas money. And she knew, you know, she had to do some of it on her own.
She kind of realized how expensive she might be.
Yeah.
Right. For the two of you, for you and your husband, it sounds like, I mean, it doesn't sound like you were bad about communicating about money before, but it sounds like now you have more of a, I guess, regimented style. Do you guys meet now and talk about money once a week or once a month? Or how does that work in your family?
Well, I wouldn't say we have a conversation about it once a week. But I mean, we always communicate as to where we are within our budget and evaluate if we're staying on track. You know, things come up, of course. You know, I needed new tires on a car. You know, we had an issue with the heater. So we had an emergency fund set up because of the program for such things. And we had to work on making sure we kept it at a certain level, at least 2,000 or more, in case that ever happened again. So we had to, you know, tweak a little bit, take some money out of my vacation savings to put towards that. So we were at a comfortable level.
Brian, this is a great discussion for the start of the year, because I love how Wendy talks about she and her husband, you know, looking at whether they're on track or not. I get this feeling that when you first talk to people, they don't have any idea where the track even is.
I would agree with you. Sometimes this outside program, I think, is nice to at least get perspective and have a starting point and have something to talk about. So I love that at SunTrust, she, you know, where Wendy works, they haven't, you know, we've got an internal workplace financial wellness program. And that was kind of the start of this. She used that as the opportunity to start the conversation, which I love.
Well, let's pivot this program now, Wendy, that you were using, that was an internal program. So what's happening? You guys have made that available for everybody?
Yes. So you can go to suntrust.com and join our UnUp movement and get started with your own kids, just talking about the simple things that every household needs to run. It's a very easy and natural conversation to have when you have that website in front of you.
And it's still, Brian, it's still a series of videos?
Yeah, well, we've added a lot of different things. And probably the easiest way to get there and to start is directly at onup.com. That, you know, at SunTrust, our purpose is lighting the way to financial well-being. And we said, how do we get more conversations like this sparked? So I love Wendy's story, because it's so, I mean, all of us can relate to it. I can relate to it, and I do this stuff for a living. But I love how at SunTrust, we've created this movement. The movement's simply called OnUp. So that's why we've got the onup.com. And you can use that really as just an opportunity to start where you are. Like you said, where is the track? Where are we currently at? So, you know, you've got all kinds of tools there. You've got assessments and so forth. You've got articles. You'll receive tips and so forth, depending on what time of the year it is. But again, it's designed to spark that conversation so that we can really start moving people from financial stress to financial confidence.
What are some of the keys, Brian, for people to do, especially this time of year while we're all thinking about our money? I remember when I was a financial planner, my office, you know, it was hard to get in to see me this time of year because I felt like I was the gym, you know, where everybody
That's
wants
right.
to go to the gym in January. Come see me in February, because then my office is empty again. But what are some of the key things for people to really nail here this first week of January?
Yeah, well, one, I love the new year. We can all have a fresh start. And the first thing I want folks to understand is that don't worry so much about what you did last year. Let's look at this year. It's a new start. Let's turn over a new leaf. I mean, let's move forward and not look back. And so don't let that hold you back. Everyone's done some good things about finance. Let's focus on those things and build momentum. And the first thing I would say is that, you know, when we go back to Wendy's story, when we talk about her being laid off, she did have an emergency savings account. And at SunTrust, we call it a confidence account. And that's not just a fancy way of calling an emergency account. There's real truth to that, because what we found is when you have one of these accounts, it's fully funded, it's in the right place, a tremendous amount of confidence will come into your life, regardless of, you know, if an emergency does happen to you in the future. You'll derive immediate value by having one of these things. And so I would ask people just to step back and say, don't worry about where you've been. Let's start right now by getting this confidence account funded. And I would take it a step further. A lot of people will say, Brian, that sounds great. I know I need one of these accounts, but how do I get going? And I let people know that to be a great saver, you need to save first and make it automatic. You know, you can go from a terrible saver to an amazing saver overnight by applying those two principles. So that's where I think people should start.
It's funny, you call it a confidence account. Mom calls it a get the heck out of my basement account. But I think we're I think we're splitting hairs there.
And you know, I've heard some people call it it saved my marriage account.
Yeah,
in
right.
all seriousness.
Yeah.
It's just nice having some money in the bank. So why not call it what it is? It's a confidence account.
Wendy, for the two of you, it doesn't seem like you really needed more confidence. Like you were, it just seems to me by your attitude, like you were pretty confident you were going to work through this.
Well, we were in a good place, but until we actually sat down and put it on paper, we didn't see the gaps and where we could do better. So kind of like the confidence account, you list what your priorities are during the program. And one of them for me was a vacation, spending time with the family. Mm. And my other thing was when it came to my next automobile, I wanted to be able to pay for it in cash and not have any debt. So I mean, I've got a tax account savings. I've got a vacation account savings. I've got a car account savings. and an IRA savings. I didn't have that plan in place before, and it just really makes you feel good about yourself when you do automate things and you know you don't have to do anything but one time to start saving for your future.
How much of those accounts, Wendy, are automated? Do you use apps and things like that to make it easier?
Absolutely. I mean, my company is gracious enough to split deposit from my paycheck, so I don't even ever see it go into my spending account. It goes right to my savings account from my employer. So that's easy as can be. And then, of course, all of my regular bills that I know are coming out of the bill account, I've set up to do automatically. So I don't even have to worry about ever incurring any type of late fee or overdraft. I know the money's always going to be there because I put the right amount in each month. It's very easy. You just have to take one day to set it all up right.
That's something, Brian, I know that a lot of employers do that people don't even know that they do. The idea that Wendy has her paycheck going to different places so that she doesn't have to think about it. That's a powerful thing.
Absolutely. I recommend that. It's the best way to save. I mean, think about how the government gets our money. You know, they're not calling us at the 30th of the month, you know, and saying, hey, if you've got a little extra money, you know, we've got some roads to build and some schools to fund. I mean, it's first and automatic. Like we can do the same thing, and Wendy is doing that perfectly. I mean, I love having Wendy right here because she's doing it right. Now, if your employer doesn't do that, which I would say most do, but if they don't, it's okay. Go to your financial institution. And when you know you get paid on this day and this day, you can have the same thing just the day after, have a certain amount swept into that account, which I love. So that's something everybody can do. One other thing I want to touch on, which I love that Wendy just talked about, is she's got different accounts for different goals. Research has proven that this is a best practice when it comes to saving. There's a psychological thing that takes place when you've got these different accounts and you have a little bit going into each one of them. It doesn't seem like a whole lot, but it adds up. Plus, you save yourself the mental math of saying, all right, I've got this big old savings account, and I know some of it's for my next car. Some of it might be for this vacation that we're excited about. No, you've got a vacation account. You might even be able to nickname it Hawaii, you know, 2018 or whatever. So I love that as well. Lots of good lessons here.
No, that's good stuff. And also, you were telling me offline, Brian, that companies can also implement the OnUp stuff. Is that true?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, it's an interesting story that SunTrust has been through. You know, a couple years ago, we did a very early employee engagement survey, and we realized, look, we have some work to do with our own employees. So we implemented an internal financial wellness program, which Wendy's been talking about, and we had a lot of really cool results. You know, the national average, if you look at corporate America today, only about 44% of employees believe that their employer cares about them financially. And now 2 years later, after implementing this program at SunTrust, 82% of our employees believe we have their best interest when it comes to their financial wellness. And obviously, Wendy is one of those, which is fantastic. But we then stepped back as a leadership team at SunTrust and said, we have something here. This is exciting. This is different. There's something about delivering a financial wellness program in the workplace. It's the source of your income. It's where your benefits are coming from. And we said, you know what, if we're going to light the way to financial well-being and if we're going to lead the movement when it comes to financial wellness, we really felt like we needed to develop this program that other companies could take advantage of. And that's exactly what we've done. We've spent really all of last year, 2016, building this program just for companies and organizations. It's called Momentum On Up. And we're excited. We've already piloted it with several organizations. And this year, we're excited to kind of open it up to even more. So I don't know if you can tell, Joe, but, you know, I'm sitting on the edge of my chair kind of talking to you. And it just excites me. We feel like there's a real big opportunity with organizations and with workplace financial wellness.
Well, I think there is. And I used to give some of those presentations when I was with American Express. We had similar things. I was just always frustrated that companies didn't realize just how important that is to have employee education around their paycheck and making sure that people aren't stressed out about their money while they're at work. It just seems like an obvious thing that if I'm trying to get the most out of my employee, that I'm not going to let them stress out about, you know, their paycheck for during the time that they're there. For people to do this on their own, it's onup.com. Is that also, Brian, where they go to get more information if they want to talk to their employer about it?
Yeah, I mean, onup.com is a great place to go. It's really where it's not just a resource. I mean, it's a movement. It's saying, I want to be better in this area. And so onup.com certainly is a great place to start. Absolutely.
Awesome. And if you're walking the dog out for your morning run or driving to work, we'll have the link on our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. Wendy, Brian, thanks a lot for hanging out.
Hey, thanks,
Thank
Jill.
You.
Hi, everyone. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Duggan. I'll have your trivia in a moment. But first, I got to say, I have been really awesome about turning over a new leaf to fight this idea that I might be conceited of all things. So I've been pretty nice person all morning. I fetched Joe some decaf coffee, gave Cooper the cat a nice long sponge bath, told OG his toupee looked nice, and I even commented to Joe's mom how she smelled a lot less like mothballs than normal. All that, and not one person responded with any thanks or appreciation. Come on! You think I'm being nice just to be nice? Notice the greatness, people. Notice it when you see it. At least I know all my faithful Duggers always appreciate my trivia. So how about this singer? You just heard how Wendy Lawrence sat her family down to talk about finances. But this isn't the case with all families. Here's a question. What percentage of parents report that their kids, age 18 to 24, are involved in their family's financial discussions? I'll be back for the answer right after the break.
Hey, Stackers, it's time in the show for us to help you solve your money problems. First of all, if you're somebody with a bunch of credit card debt, you've got to change that behavior. Let's work on changing it. The first thing we have to do is get open. And we asked Nick Clement, the CEO of Magnify Money, head to stackingbenjamins.com/Magnify Money to reach them. Why people don't talk about their credit card debt.
I know. I wish we would. If you remember when you're in school and you look left and you look right, and one of these people will. Well, one of these people will have credit card debt, and it probably will be you at some point in your life. And because we don't talk about it, because we're so ashamed, we're so embarrassed, what we end up doing is nothing. We stay put. We don't come up with a plan to get out of it. We don't negotiate better deals and refinance. And so it just becomes this horrible, quiet problem that can make someone feel awful. You shouldn't be ashamed. Almost, one out of two people have it. Speak up. And only when you talk about it and deal with it can you get out of the problem.
So, of course, we don't talk about it. But you know what? If you don't hold yourself accountable, you'll get nowhere. Then once you decide that it's time to make things better, head to stackingbenjamins.com/magnify money for not just better credit card options with 0% interest rates to help surf your debt to lower rate, but also for better savings accounts and checking accounts. And if the change you're trying to create in your life is to buy a new home and you've got a high credit score, guess where you should go? StackingBenjamins.com/SoFi. That's SOFI. And as we've talked about before, you go to SoFi because of their incredibly low rates and their easy system of getting approved for loans. You'll know in most cases within 10 minutes. But we asked Dan Macklin exactly what types of loans they have on mortgages.
SoFi offers a 30-year fixed and a 15-year fixed and a 7-1 adjustable rate mortgage. The key difference with our mortgages is we require as little as 10% down payment on those mortgages. So you may only have 10% of the purchase price, and that can be good enough for SoFi. And importantly, we don't charge any mortgage insurance. So for many people who haven't yet saved up a huge down payment, we're a great option.
StackingBenjamins.com/SoFi, S-O-F-I. When you're changing your life is either a new house, refinancing student loans, or taking out a personal loan to get rid of debt.
Hi, everyone. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. Welcome back from the break. I had a good vent session with Joe's mom, who just sat with her eyes closed while I poured my heart out. And then I realized something. Being nice isn't about doing things for yourself. Being nice is about doing things for others. Wow. I had a little help from Joe's mom on this one, but really, if I'm honest, I came up with this brilliant revelation all by myself. And if I'm being really honest, people around here like Joe and OG could take a few lessons from me. Now, on to the trivia. Before the break, I asked, what percentage of parents report that their kids aged 18 to 24 were involved in family financial discussions? The answer, While we'd hope that parents are involving kids on the game plan so they can get a leg up when they're out on their own, only 46% of parents report involving their kids. Amazing. I've had some comments, but because I'm so nice, I'm going to keep them to myself. It's just the kind of guy I am. Now, excuse me as I go do some kind deeds so that people notice how freaking awesome I am and unconceited and unassuming. That's what it takes to be great.
I love how Doug's turned over a new leaf.
New year, new Doug.
Brand spanking. It feels
brandy
lot,
new.
Feels a lot like the same Doug. But thanks a lot to Wendy Lawrence and to Brian Ford for coming down to the basement. Once again, we'll have their link to onup.com on our show notes at stackybenjamins.com. Or, you know, they talked a little bit about being in the workplace. And I mentioned, as you may have heard, OG, as you were stepping back into the room, that, you know, they can bring this to workplaces as well. And I went and did workplace education. You've done some workplace education. We need a lot more of that. We need a lot more of that.
Well, any kind of education. The reality is that most people don't have any idea what they're doing when it comes to money. And then something like we talked about a couple weeks ago, don't have cash reserve on hand. And sometimes you just get so far down the path of not knowing anything that you just go, well, I'm just not going to be good at this, so I'm not going to think about it. And sometimes a gentle nudge in the right direction, or, you know, just a little bit of education can turn the ship in the right direction and point you on the right path.
Yeah. But I also think from the employer's perspective, you know, you don't want your, I mentioned this earlier, but you don't want your employees sitting around worried about their money. I think if I'm an employer, I think a lot of employers that I talk to, they looked at it as a waste of time. Like, no, we gotta make widgets. We don't have time for this stuff. Yeah. And I think, man, if you help people, you know, the old Zig Ziglar thing, you help people get what they want, you get what you want.
Well, and you know, if you're worried about problems at home or you're worried about problems with money, that's going to affect your ability to think about producing great results for your organization. So you definitely got to take care of yourself.
Absolutely. Hey, let's throw out the Haven Lifeline and tackle some of life's, or rather life insurance's, most important questions. Our friends at Haven Life Insurance Agency, they are disrupting the life insurance industry by focusing on those things that you value most, your family and your time. It's why they've created the only affordable term life insurance policy you can purchase entirely online, and qualified healthy applicants, well, guess what? You could even skip the medical exam. Head to stackybenjamins.com/Haven Life now to learn more about life insurance the modern way. Top-rated insurance and all made easy, OG.
Painless.
Well, today this is kind of funny because I've got two Haven Life lines that I'm throwing out, but I'm throwing out the first one to our listeners because I want some help with this one. This Haven Lifeline right here.
And I'm not good enough anymore? Is that what you're saying?
Well, listen to this. This comes to us from our friend Crystal. Hey, Crystal.
Hi, I listened to you guys' podcast, and you guys should do an episode on a business that failed so many times until it became successful.
A business that failed so many times until it became successful. I want to tie that into personal finance so it fits the show. I like the idea. I don't know what, I've been racking my brain. Crystal sent this a couple weeks ago. Been racking my brain for wrapping that into the show. So if you've got a story out there, here's what we like on the show, OG. We like stories where we don't necessarily know the ending, right? Today, I mean, we knew that Wendy's story with her family was going to be a happy ending, but the fact that she got her kids so involved that the kids began doing a lot of proactive stuff on their own just by sitting together with mom and making it something the whole household talked about. That's a story we really didn't know. We didn't know that ending. So if somebody knows where we can kind of go with that one, that's a great lifeline. Any thoughts there?
Whew, businesses that have failed but finally made it. I mean, generally speaking, most businesses fail. So right. It's just another example of, you know, believing in yourself as well as, you know, kind of keeping your head down. And
we just had Lisa Napoli on a couple of weeks ago, you know, talking about the Ray Kroc story. And we did not spend a lot of time there, but Ray Kroc was having some, you know, wasn't really making great money until he came across the McDonald's brothers. So that story, Ray and Joan, I thought was a fantastic book. Crystal, that's kind of that story. We didn't tell that part of the story. But if anybody's got, who wants to lend us a hand on that one, that's fantastic. But then I also have this one. Normally people leave me their email address. And this one, Doug, who says he's a much more awesome Doug, gives us a question. And I don't know what he's referring to. And maybe because you've never heard this OG, of course, I wait until we record to play this for you. Maybe you know what Doug's referring to. Say hello, Doug.
Hey, Joe and OG. This is Doug from Florida, soon to be Shreveport, Louisiana. So I'll be just down the road from you guys. Maybe I can hang out in the basement. I can make some killer jalapeno popcorn. Anyway, guys, I was wondering what your thoughts are on e-reads. I'm kind of getting my toes wet into the e-read realm, and it seems to be pretty promising. So the quarterly returns are pretty reasonable. They're not crazy, but it seems to be like a nice investment. I just wanted to get your guys' opinions on what you think about e-reads. Love the show. Thanks, guys.
I have to admit, I've been, is it e-weeks? Is he talking about e-weeks? I have looked up this thing spelled 50,000 different ways. I don't know what he's talking about. I would love for him to come over and make his popcorn, though, since he's
except I don't like popcorn. E-REITs? Like Real Estate Investment Trust?
You know what?
E-REITs?
I didn't think about that.
That's what I heard for. That's what I heard him say. A quick Google of it. There's some results there. I don't know the first damn thing about it. So that ought to tell you everything you need to know is that we don't know nothing. E-REITs.
This is Fundrise. It's funny because
we're making this live television, folks. We just kind of live radio. We get what we get here.
Yeah, if he had said Fundrise, I would have gotten it. I didn't hear E-REITs. If he would have said Fundrise, I would have had it. So Fundrise, E-REITs, next evolution in real estate investing. So over a half decade of learning, combined innovative technology with new federal regulations.
Blah, 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 blah. If this is just a REIT, why not just buy an equity REIT?
Here's what worries me. The second thing that worries me. So I don't know anything about this either, Doug. But the second thing here, quarterly liquidity, which means it's a non-traded REIT, right?
Yep.
So we've talked a lot about non-traded REITs in the past.
Well, it says they've adopted a quarterly redemption plan whereby shareholders may request that a REIT redeem some of all of your shares, subject to limitations.
Which is exactly the way non-traded
ding,
REITs
ding,
work.
Ding, ding, ding. That's the same way as non-traded REITs.
Yep, but it does say...
not redeem more than 5% of the total shares in any given year.
It does say roughly 1/10 of the fee of similar non-traded REITs, which is probably true.
Yep, like that.
And by the way, that's not hard to go 1/10 of the fee of
non-traded and still make a load of money if you're the REIT guy. We only charge 2%, which is like 90% less than the rest of them. Wow.
That's so great. Direct to investor online distribution, the radical accountability. Quick answers. I don't know. So let's start off with what a REIT is, OG, and then we'll go from there. This is clearly
assuming that this is what he's talking about.
Yes.
Real estate investment trust, right, is a pooled asset. So company comes up with an idea and they say, we're going to go buy hotel properties in the West Coast and we're going to buy them up and then we're going to lease them back to Holiday Inns, and Holiday Inns are going to pay us rent for the property that we now own. And then we use that rent income to pay our mortgage and what's left after our fees, et cetera, get returned to you in the form of a dividend. Usually that dividend's taxed a little bit more favorable rate because it's kind of return premium, so to speak, return of capital. And as long as they distribute a certain amount of the REIT proceeds every year or the income proceeds every year, tax a little bit favorable rate. Now, real estate, of course, is very illiquid. You know, you can't go sell your house tomorrow, buy a new one the next day, sell a different, you know, and when you're doing large transactions like buying hotels or, you know, ski resorts like some of them did or water parks or whatever, I mean, these are transactions that take months and months and months, if not years, to complete. And of course, it takes as much to unwind that. So you're putting your money in with a long-term time horizon and saying, I understand that I might not see the end of this for 10 or 15 years down the line. And in exchange for that, they pay you a higher dividend. But of course, it's not guaranteed. And what we saw the last decade or so, maybe a little bit longer than that, is once the valuations of these properties started going down in the tank, now they're not paying the same dividends anymore. They can't replace the properties. They can't sell them. Or if they do sell them, they're selling them at a loss. And so you're seeing almost all of them. I can't think of one. Somebody's going to email and say, well, there's this one that was profitable. But I can't think of one that hasn't gone through a pretty profound decline in its values, and there's nothing you can do about it. You buy it for 10 bucks a share. A dollar share goes to the commission, to everybody who made this thing happen. And now they're trading at $3 a share, $2 a share, $1 a share, 41 cents a share, all because you were promised a 6% dividend. I would be much more interested in a liquid one that you can buy in the stock market. You can sell tomorrow afternoon if you want to. And meanwhile, it pays a 4.5% dividend. I don't know what what REITs are at right now, but that's about where they were last time.
Now here I'm on the Fundrise website, and they're obviously talking about the issue with publicly traded REITs. And it says that's that they're correlated to broader market volatility, meaning the value may fluctuate up or down depending on how the rest of the stock market is doing.
Sure.
It's true to some extent. Non-traded REITs have grown in popularity because of the perceived consistent double-digit dividends paid to investors. However, they've
I don't know any dividends that are double-digit to you.
Well, you know, they say right at the bottom of this, earn 12 to 14% average returns.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about any REIT is that, so this concept, direct-to-investor, lowering the commissions, like all that, right?
Awesome.
That sounds fantastic. The tough part here that they don't talk about is the underlying investment. Because even in times when I had non-traded REITs that I liked back in the day before all the regulation changes, you know, I remember one that was, well, and I think you used the same one. Remember the one that was nursing homes?
Yeah, great story.
Oh, fantastic story. My clients made a killing. Made just an absolute killing. But that was that was back before everything changed.
It was in the 90s, yeah.
Yes, that was back before everything changed. So a lot of the regulations have changed around those and how they report and things like that. But I'll tell you, I still want to know, if I'm in a non-traded REIT especially, where once a quarter I can request that I get out, I can't necessarily get out, I still don't know if I like it or not, because I want to know what I'm buying. What am I
buying? Here's the thing that irritates me about this. Why do you have to oversell the thing, right? Why do you have to say 12 to 14% a year? That doesn't exist in real life. Like, there is no recorded history of 12 to 14% of an asset class. The best one is small cap stocks. Like, everybody knows that. It's in every financial advisor's office. You know, why not just say, we're a tenth of the cost. We're a replacement for fixed income.
Fantastic.
Your money's locked up for 20 years, but we're going to kick off, we think, maybe about 5% a year, which is probably realistic. Why not just say that and be done with it? Why do you have to say 12 to 14? It's crappy.
And by the way, we're not just ripping on Fundrise here. You know,
no,
we said the same thing about Dave Ramsey. Says a ton of great stuff. Gets in trouble when he starts talking about mutual funds doing 12%. Basing your financial plan on 12%.
And you can, as long as you go all small cap.
But he doesn't need to do it either, is the point.
Yeah.
It might be true for a small period of time or not, you don't have to do that. And because people, that's all they hear.
Yeah.
I look at this, I immediately saw 12 to 14%, even though there's all kinds of other cool stuff on this page. So,
well, yeah, you're looking at some of the properties. I'm with you. You know, you want to know what you're investing in. And it says here, we're trying to provide liquidity after 5 years. And it's got like a little mountain chart or a little bell curve. High probability, moderate probability, low probability. Well, if you know anything about statistics, a bell curve, that's the definition of the bell curve. Just because they put a different chart at the bottom of it. Yeah, that was one of the greatest things that I got out of Don't Quit Your Day Job, right? Was when PK was on all the time, he's like, you can make a chart look anything you want. You just change the X and the Y axis. That's all they did here, is they just made a flipping bell curve and put numbers at the bottom. Come on. If you're talking about e-REITs, and this is what the world of e-REITs are, I'm not even looking any further into this. Pass. If you're talking about something else, that we didn't hear you correctly.
If he's talking about a trend of REITs, of non-traded REITs, if he's purely talking about non-traded REITs, direct to investor, 1/10 of the commission. Okay. You're starting to fix the problem with non-traded REITs. If that's it, if that's all he's talking about, then okay. But I still want to know what real estate I own. I mean, there's a big difference between owning commercial office space and earning strip malls.
Well, it does say here, it says featured assets. It tells you, it says a 2-unit New York condo renovation. Or a suburban Seattle subsidized luxury.
No. Yeah, but that's not my point is, he's asking whether e-REITs are good or not. Me saying, do you like all small cap stocks? No, I don't. I mean, that's like asking me that question. Do you like all large cap stocks? No, I don't. I still want to know what I, you know, I like investing in the S&P 500 because I know I'm getting the 500 biggest companies in the United States. I like that. I know what I own, right?
Yeah.
E-REIT, I still don't know what I own. Real estate, I don't know what, you know, so me saying E-REITs are good or bad, I got to know what the real estate is. So if I like this condo renovation idea, okay, great. You know, yeah. I think it gets more granular than whether I like that or not. Okay. That's good. If anybody thinks Doug's saying something other than E-REITs, we just pontificated about something that Doug might not even have been asking us about. Write to me, joe@stackybenjamins.com. Also, if you've got a letter for the show, send that to joe@stackybenjamins.com. If you want to be have us throw you out the Haven Lifeline, here's how you do that. It's stackybenjamins.com/voicemail. So those are all the ways for us to answer your questions. We'd love to do a listener show soon, a listener letter show soon. I was going to tackle a letter today, but looking at the time, I don't think we've got time to do that today, OG. Big thanks to everybody for listening. Happy New Year, OG. Happy flipping New Year.
Happy New Year to you too.
Great way to start the year. Thanks again to Devin Carroll for helping us with the show, for helping us, as you say, OG, parlez-vous.
Parlez-vous.
As Devin says, Devin's probably right. You'll catch his new podcast wherever finer podcasts are listened to. All right, that's it for today. We'll see everybody back here on Friday with our look into Len Penzo's eight ball. How are the predictions that the Roundtable Group made last year? And what predictions do they have for 2017? We're going to find out in a couple days. By the way, our new segment, or our segment in the middle, the FinTech segment, we have a new sponsor, OG, FreshBooks. That is now going to be the FreshBooks FinTech segment. So we're going all FreshBooks on Fridays. So we'll see everybody with the FreshBooks FinTech segment or look into the eight ball. Go stack some Benjamins.
Sure, Joe. I'll give you a summary. I mean, I'll give it away for free. It's what I do. It's what I do. Hey, so here's the most brilliant part of the whole first podcast of the 2017 extravaganza. Let me tell you what you should have learned today. First, involving the family in money discussions early can not only give them a much needed education, but it'll also help you keep your financial house in order. As Joe's mom says, what is inspected is respected. Second, maybe the beginning of the year is a great time to ask yourself what your overall plan is and how you'll do better this year. But the big lesson, don't go trying to show people how humble and reserved you are. Apparently, Joe's mom will think that you're just bragging and tell you it's your week to wash the dishes again. So unfair. Special thanks to Wendy Lawrence and Brian Ford from SunTrust Bank for stopping by. You'll find out more about SunTrust and how you can work with your family's financial future in the new year by visiting our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC. The show is created by Joe Saul Sehi, produced by Richie Rutter Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor. And special thanks to myself. Ladies love me, girls adore me. I mean, even the ones who never saw me, like the way that I rhyme on the show. The reason why, man, I don't know. Huh, I just made that up. Hashtag, yeah, I still got it.
The more you look at this website, the more you don't like it.
The more I just, yeah. I mean, sorry, if anybody's on Fundrise, You're welcome to come and defend this garbage. But so on the Why Us Proven Track Record tab, it's got a little picture there and it's got like a mountain chart. Proven track record, 525 million, 13%. That's what it says in big bold. And then in below it, it says approximate average return to investors in 2015. What day do you have right now? I mean, now it's January 4th, right?
Yes.
We're recording this a smidge early.
Right.
Okay. Are we recording this sometime in 2015? Or maybe toward the end of 2016, early 2016? Why does this say approximate average return in 2015? This was a flipping year ago this thing ended. Why does it have to be off by a year? Approximate? Shouldn't it be exact? Let's read the disclosure. I can't even read it. It's so
flipping. Oh, yeah, because there is a little number one by the disclosure.
Yeah. The information presented, so this is their 13%, represents the historical operating results for the sponsor of the various REITs available for investment on this website. The experience of a real estate program sponsored by Rise Companies Corp. Investors of the various e-REITs common shares should not assume that they will experience returns, if any, comparable to those experienced by investors and sponsors affiliated prior real estate programs. And investors would thereby acquire any ownership interest in the entities to which the foregoing information relates.
But it's all in bold. It's all in bold.
For a fuller description of the sponsor's prior performance, please see the prior performance summary section of each e-REIT's offering circulator and supplements thereto, links to which are available on each e-REIT's individual offering page, as well as the SEC EDGAR website. S&P 500 figure assumes reinvested dividends. Source Robert Shiller. Blah, 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 blah. We beat the S&P 500 by 8.5 times last year. No, I think you mean 2 years ago, dingbat. Did you?
Is that what it says? Did you?
Yeah, that's what it says. Did you? How did we do it? Systematic due diligence. Commit. This is all such fluff, isn't it? God bless America. Previous investments. Annual return. Have you been to Brooklyn before?
It's nice.
Do they have something that looks like the Arc de Triomphe in Brooklyn? Because I swear to God, this is a picture from France next to their, this is the shit we bought in Brooklyn page. So,
looking at the Brooklyn page. I don't see any France.
Doesn't that look like the Arc de Triomphe there on the previous investments? If this is all legit, awesome. Cool. Not for me. Is it for you?
I don't like how it shows all of this stuff. And then it says, this information is for information purposes. It's impersonal and not individualized for any specific investor's financial situation and is not investment advice. These ratings are not intended to be, nor should you interpret them to be a prediction of how a particular investment will actually perform. Yet, it seems to be laid out in a way that it wants me to believe that this is the way it's going to perform. You know?
Well, of course.
Projected return. There's a projected return calculator.
Well, let me guess. It's just all 15% times number of years and how much money you invest.
If I take $5,000 and I get a 13% rate of return, by the way, guess which one of those two numbers I can change?
The dollar in.
I can't change the 13% to a lower number. I can't change it. And the term, by the way, says 36 months. Oh, because there's 20 months of a 36-month term until they want to turn this around.
Just saying, the problem is that the plan, we can have the plan to liquidate all this stuff in 3 years.
This is the problem.
These ties of transactions you can't liquidate them that fast.
Well, and here's another thing, and we haven't seen the prospectus, but in the prospectus, remember how during the, you and I both know a private REIT company that had printed the day that it was in the prospectus that they had to sell at X time. And remember how they flaunted that? But then when they went to sell that, everybody who was buying knew that they had to sell and they got lowballed. Remember that?
Oh yeah.
They got lowballed because everybody knew they had to sell. So there was no incentive for people to pay them a ton. They were not in the driver's seat. Obviously we haven't seen that with this REIT. I don't know if they have to sell at the end of that. And by the way, this isn't this isn't Fundrise himself either, OG. Fundrise is working with Inception Investors, a real estate private equity firm.
Oh, there's layers. And I mean, you knew this. As soon as you get into the REIT thing, there's layers upon layers of people with their fingers in the pie. And this is how the Nick Scorsch went and all his stuff went upside down in a hurry.
Presenting real estate is easy money is the thing that scares me.
how far we've forgotten, right?
I know.
Doesn't it just seem like...
Did 2008 you know? Just happen?
Yep.
All right. We'll see you later. That was a very positive after show to start off our...
Happy New Year.